You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're setting a course for deeper into the expanse. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and I appreciate you joining us and sticking around when I make double references like that to start the show. That is, of course, a reference to a line from Star Trek Enterprise, the underappreciated Star Trek series, and it is also a reference to the Amazon series, although I don't believe the series started on Amazon, the Amazon series, The Expanse, which I have started. I am almost at the end of season one, and I have to say that it is sci-fi that harkens back to what I've always liked about sci-fi. I would say it is an oasis in the barren land of social justice sci-fi that exists nowadays. Now, I don't know where it's going. There's a lot of stuff about, you know, victim culture, the have and the have-nots, so they could totally screw this up, but we do know a co-host on the show here loves it, so that gives me hope. But as far as through season one, I would highly recommend it. It is a tremendous show so far, and I'm going to binge the rest of it during this remaining time in lockdown. Let's get to it. Let's introduce the other people who are getting through the rest of the lockdown with all of us. Joining us on this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Our time in quarantine may be coming to an end here, Justin, at least in one regard. I think the soft revolution is upon us. You called last week for basically a full-scale civil war. But as I noted, and William also noted, it may just be that people are going to give up following these quarantine orders. At least that's my experience in the D.C. area. Yes, the District of Columbia region of the country, where people have stopped giving an F.
I called for basically a civil war because in my experience, Daniel, it is only on a hard rebellion that things can come to a finish. That's just my experience. I don't know what your experience is, but that's how it works for me.
Depends on the age, I suppose. So there was an air show this weekend in D.C., and people were out in the thousands just to hang out and watch an air show.
Yeah!
That's
FISA. The most excited I've ever been for an air show in my life, by the way.
My wife went to get groceries at Walmart, and oh my God, Walmart looks like any other day of the non-corona week.
Do they have it set up outside your Walmart where it looks like the apocalypse, where they've got like the carts turned over to direct you how to walk and everything?
No.
Oh my God, outside our Walmart here, when you approach it, they have carts set up so you can only go in the entrance and out the exit. And there are people standing there directing you where to go. And they like look at you like with a disapproving glare if you're not wearing a mask. And then you go inside and no one has a mask on.
No, this is free for all, and as I may have noted last week, even worse this week, people wearing masks, but in such a way that it would make no difference.
I saw a meme where someone had a hole cut in it so they could breathe easier.
Awesome!
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
It's kind of like
right?
that, you know, mask partially over your mouth but not your nose, mask hanging under your chin, mask off to the side, like by your cheek. People have stopped giving an F.
My favorite masks are the handkerchiefs, like you're a bank robber in the Old West, as if those are going to stop any sort of particles from going through those.
Yeah, I wear a scarf out, but it's not because I fear for catching the coronavirus. It's because I just want to be not kicked out of stores. But apparently, any day now, I think the stores are going to drop the mask requirements because no one else cares.
There's only one place that did that to me. I went into a Chipotle, and they, like, ran to me, and they're like, you can't be in here without a mask. And then I went back in the same Chipotle 2 days later, and there was a guy in there without a mask, and I'm like, what?
So right. The soft rebellion is here, Justin.
Well, I'm just waiting for it to get hard.
Giggity.
Also joining us, from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Wait, here comes the crescendo.
Hello, hello. it's
what was that from?
V for Vendetta, of course.
Oh, all right.
Here comes the crescendo. So, yeah, things are a little crazy out here, too. We've been asked to, at the store, to put tables and chairs in front of the counter to enforce the six-foot rule.
Oh, so, they're just starting that in California? I love when I go into a restaurant here and it's like, it's like that. My favorite is the Chinese food restaurants. Oh, my God. They have tables in front of the doors on the inside, and their doors aren't open, so you have to lock. And then they, like, approach things warily. And I'm like, is this because you've dealt with this before? You know how to do this.
Yeah, so I went to Whole Foods this weekend, and they even have special cashiers now for cash only. Everyone else, credit card, contactless, can go to any of the lines, but you have to go to a special line for that.
Part of the Huntington Beach thing?
No, I wish. I wish I had gone down there. I had more important things to do, unfortunately. But I did see, and I posted it in Discord, link in the show notes. Remember, we covered this story of the folks, fascists, filling in the skate park, the famous skate park at Venice Beach. Well, apparently, right afterwards, people bought their four-wheelers and just started four-wheeling on it instead. Which I found.
Yeah, I mentioned that last week, and you both no-sold me. You're like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So I did post
it. The Huntington Beach thing tracks, because ever since when I lived there, when I first moved to L.A. and I lived in Orange County, people told me that Huntington Beach was full of skinheads and racists. So it tracks that they would rebel against fascism, because rebel against fascism.
Yeah. The best part is on Reddit, I follow R Long Beach. And
I'm sorry.
Well, it's for me, it's a temperature taking thing, right? And wow, are they like way off the deep end, right? Any mention of anything, like the total disdain for the protests and people that want to, enjoy their freedom, and the, any hint of nonconformity to the lap up all the restrictions, more restrictions is better, this is going to last until the winter, is just squashed, right?
Reddit has moved so far left that it's insane, William.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, I had to stop, like, reading the Patriots subreddit because, like, everything was just, like, with the whole thing with our new kicker, that sent me over the edge. And sometimes I browse there because I end up there because of, like, news articles. And there was a news article this week about Disney World. Man caught camping on Disney's Discovery Island says it was tropical paradise. Discovery Island is, like, this abandoned thing on the Disney World Resort property that became unhealthy and unsafe, so they abandoned it because they were like, we don't want anyone to go there. But apparently people still take it as, like, a challenge to sneak there sometimes because you can only get there by boat. So I read this story, and I was reading the Reddit comments about it, and then it just shows how insane these people are. Somebody said, would be really cool if we could develop laws against the protections of obviously abandoned land. Yeah, it might be private property, but there's nothing of value there. There's no way a person should be charged with a crime just for existing there. I think this is a great opportunity for the federal government to step up and add protections for at-risk peoples by creating laws that allow the rehabilitation of these giant wastes of space. I wanted to tell this person. I saw this. I wanted to reply. Hey, so that shed in your backyard you're not using, Gerald can sleep in it now. This is how far left Reddit is, William. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. Well, I it wasn't just Reddit, though. I think there are a lot of Californians, especially, that are just lapping this up. I mean, we see it on Twitter and we see it in the news, but I think that's distorting some of the people's views here. Like, even some of my coworkers are, and friends that I talk to are just caught up in this anxiety cycle and not seeing that the rest of America has moved on, right? Like, they're ready, you know, they're ready to get back to it. We've already seen the supply chain start to be affected. Meats are going out of stock. Other things are going out of stock. Transportation is becoming harder and harder. Reliability is non-existent right now. So this is serious. And let's not lie to ourselves. This is not because of the virus. This is because of the restrictions. And that's the secret that you cannot say right now, right? They want to blame it on the virus instead of the restrictions. And that's really important.
In their mind, it is the virus, because this is a consequence of what we had to do to stop the virus. So,
but you don't stop the virus. That's the issue.
That's sort of that's sort of the suppressed premise that we've all forgotten about from the very beginning of this, right? Which is that there's no way to stop it. We're all going to get it eventually, quote unquote, whatever that means. And the point of the restrictions was just to flatten things out. So if that was the premise from the beginning, and we're all on lockdown to flatten things out, and we're never going to stop it, then changing the narrative to let's stay on lockdown until we stop the virus means we're never getting off lockdown.
Well, you've gone right to the end of this episode already. I'm so glad.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed your trip here into the midside.
That was
good luck out there. And remember, revolt against your government.
I mean, we could just end the series now, to be honest with you. That's a perfect ending. No, that was what I was going to build toward in this episode. So let's hold on to that thought. And let's go into these suppressed premises, Daniel, because you have the tweet from the guy in the BuzzFeed editor.
BuzzFeed
about
Oakland.
About the beaches. We can go into that. I also want to talk about Gavin Newsom. So why don't we start with that, and then we'll go into everything. We'll start with the beaches tweet, we'll go into Gavin Newsom, and then we'll unpack all these suppressed premises and culminate in what you were just talking about. Does that sound good?
Okay.
All right. Okay, if we have to. I hope the audience doesn't feel that way as we head into Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on the road here. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. If we have helped you at any point keep your mental sanity during this quarantine, why don't you toss us even a cent? Can you go as low as a cent on Patreon? I don't know. But any amount you want, hit us up on Patreon, themidside.com/Patreon, patreon.com/themidside, midside time. I don't know. Maybe we can make that a thing. Just support us on Patreon. We'd greatly appreciate that. Thank you to all our Midsiders who already support us on Patreon. We've had some great Midside events during this quarantine. So, Daniel, I was going to start with Gavin Newsom's comments, but I think based upon what you've been saying and what we've been talking about, I think starting with you talking about this beach tweet would be a great way to sort of escalate things a little bit so people can be prepared for me going off on Gavin Newsom. So why don't you start with that?
Yeah, so there's something in particular that just pisses off the left about people going to beaches. And
Florida!
And I thought it, so I didn't know, I had no idea it was this ingrained in people, but it is apparently. And then I was scrolling through Twitter and I saw a tweet that I thought was satire, and I laughed because I thought it was really good satire of the left. And I went to check out this person's profile, and it turns out this person is a BuzzFeed editor in Oakland, and it is not satire. It is commentary. So here's the tweet from Scott Lucas. Quote, "Beaches are bad, actually. They mean nothing, produce nothing, have no history, no language, no thought, no purpose. If you like the beach, you are the exhausted subject of late capitalism, literally the capital last man or woman." End quote. Justin, what
I find it interesting that you find this tweet insane because you hate the outdoors.
I do hate the outdoors, but you have to remember that my hatred of the outdoors is from my value hierarchy. I don't think that the outdoors is per se valueless. I don't think that beaches have no purpose, or that if you like them, you're the product of late stage capitalism, which I don't even know what that means, other than it's a communist war cry at the moment.
Go ahead, Warren.
I have a question. Which lands have peoples and like culture and language? What were the things again? Language,
purpose, history.
Are there lands with those things?
Yeah, if you're not white.
I forgot. Okay, yes. Because like, you know, other non, you know, the non-Western patriarchy imbue spirit inside of their lands. But wouldn't a Native American even disagree with that? Like an Indian tribe?
Yeah, it's weird.
Like they do hold beaches as having those things.
Yeah, you have to keep in mind, I mean, your point is well taken, William. For anyone out there, I think you have to keep in mind that they're finding a reason to hate on beaches because, quote unquote, the commoners like to go to beaches and enjoy them and enjoy the outside, and the commoners are not listening to their government overlords at the moment. There's nothing inherently wrong with beaches. And in fact, you might argue that beaches or riverbanks or whatever, that's civilization. That's seafaring. That's the first people, humans, taking out from the land and going out and exploring and finding new things and new foods and trade and all the things that these commies hate. So,
right. That point is very well taken. Every fucking country, well, not every country, but every continent has beaches. Okay? And where did people originally settle? By the beaches, by the ports. Right? That's why we have cities like New Orleans at the end of the Mississippi River. Right? Port
Boston.
Cities. Boston, right. The harbor. And the irony is this guy's from fucking Oakland, which is what? A port city. Isn't that a port? The San Francisco Bay? Beaches have no value for you? You wouldn't exist without the beach.
I like to think of Oakland as just a collection of houses, but yeah.
Right. Well, Oakland's a shithole. I mean, and they lost their football team, so they're just wiling out. But no, this literally is... Dude, this is a response to Florida. It 100% is. It makes me so glad that I moved to Florida. When people at the beginning of all this were taking pictures from the internet of people on the beach and shaming Floridians, I was at the beach. And I've considered going back now. I haven't because, I don't want to get up, drive an hour and a half, and drive back just to, like, spite people. I'd rather watch The Expanse. But I will be going to the beach sooner rather than later. The second they open up Disney, I will be going sooner rather than later. It is a response to Floridians because Floridians, most of them, don't have this fear in them that you're talking about. That's what it is.
Yes. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. And it's selective outrage in the sense that they want to be mad at Florida in particular because Florida represents, I don't know, conservatism, I guess, East Coast conservatism, whatever,
well,
if that's what it means. But
Florida is the antithesis of California, okay? It's a big state, and DeSantis is managing it as if it's a big state. And he continually keeps saying, 70% of our cases are in Miami, so why do you want me to shut down the entire state? I'm letting the individual counties decide what to do. And now that we're reopening, we're going to reopen everywhere but Miami, because that's where all the cases are. And they're mad at them because what does California want to do? It wants to keep everyone on lockdown. Why?
Control, for the most part.
Yeah,
but
we were told that we needed to flatten the curve, right? The curve's been flattened. And I realize, you could say there's lag and, opening back up might cause the curve to increase. Great. Prove it. Right?
Yeah. But
because you also claimed there would be 3 million dead.
Right.
All right. So to get to your late capital...
Hold on! I had a point!
Okay.
selective outrage is ideological and is clearly ideological because anyone who took 10 minutes to look around, saw that there were equally as many pictures of people in Santa Monica, by the way,
yes,
at the beach this weekend, as there were in Florida.
Yes.
But that's Santa Monica. That's West Coast. That's enlightened. Those people are clearly social distancing and understand what they're doing. In Florida, it's hillbillies who vote Republican, and thus they don't deserve our sympathy. They deserve to die of coronavirus.
I never understood the Florida man thing on as deep of a level before this whole coronavirus thing and living here. It's unbelievable the war of rhetoric that has happened between the labeling of California and the labeling of Florida. It's literally California are the cool kids and Florida are the losers, the nerds. It's insane.
Yeah.
And Daniel, the late stage capitalism thing that you're wondering what they mean, when they say late stage capitalism, what they're talking about is they're saying people who have luxury who don't deserve it. So our greatest argument for capitalism is, hey, the lowest of the low in the capitalist system live like the kings of yesteryear. And their argument is, well, that's not deserved because they're taking it away from people who don't have it. And therefore, anyone who does that kind of thing is an immoral person. That's what they mean when they say things like late stage capitalism. So when you go to the beach, you have so much luxury when there are people starving on the street, where there are people dying in police brutality, where there are people who are unemployed right now, that you have that luxury is unfair. And you have this illusion because capitalism has given you this illusion that you're okay. And because you can live and have that illusion, you are a result of late stage capitalism.
Yeah, Daniel, I think you've said it best once before.
I am still privileged in some way. I'm so curious about the context of that, since I don't remember anything from this show. So anyone tweeting the words late stage capitalism just needs to be kicked in the shins. That's really the only... You're tweeting. You're tweeting on the internet. Tweeting on the internet about late stage capitalism. Go away.
Yeah, but he's aware of his privilege, so he's okay, because he owns it. He's doing what he can to break down the system.
As I've said many a time, Justin, I've checked my privilege, and I'm fine.
I'm obviously
You just asked me to check. You didn't ask me to do anything about it. You just said, check it. I checked. I'm fine.
It's like when you check your oil, and you're like, I don't need more oil.
It's fine. Levels are fine.
All right, so let's go on to more California craziness, and it's actually relevant to everything we're saying with this elitism, and it's what fucking pisses me off so much. I feel like I was in an abusive relationship with California and I haven't dealt with it yet because it still makes me angry and maybe it shouldn't make me angry. But all of the states started talking about reopening, right? I want to give major respect to Georgia because they're the ones that the governor was like, yeah, we're going to reopen. And then everyone else was like, wait, if they're reopening, our people are going to wondering why we're not reopening. So I think we have to give major respect to Georgia. Are we all in agreement on that?
Well, especially after the crap they took. I mean, The Atlantic wrote an article saying Georgia's experiment in human sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that...
Georgia was already
hold on,
sacrificed.
That turns my stomach because we know... I actually indirectly know someone whose son has committed suicide because of the lockdown, right? Like, the lockdown is human sacrifice. Right, like
quite
let's
literal.
Let's not make any like evasions around that.
That's right,
and that is precisely what makes me so angry about Gavin Newsom's comments this week. So, because everyone else is reopening, Gavin Newsom had to make a statement about California reopening, and he made the most evil fucking statement I have ever heard him make in my entire life. And I am using that very literally when I say evil. And I'm going to pick out a specific quote from his statement about planning to reopen California. We are not going to go back to the way things were until we get immunity or a vaccine, Newsom said. We will base reopening plans on facts and data, not on ideology, not what we want, not what we hope. First of all, on a fucking pragmatic level, immunity or vaccine? And they've been telling us that's 18 months out from when this started. So now that's 16 months out? practically, you think you're going to be able to keep everyone inside?
Also, keeping everyone inside will delay herd immunity. Like, the best way to get herd immunity is to take your most vulnerable, have them isolate, have everyone else mingle, and then you're back to normal. Like, that's how herd immunity works.
Don't we have a population of people we already know had it? Why don't we just put them back to work at the very least? Your point is very well taken, William.
Be a small people, bunch of people working.
It's better than
no
people.
Did I see you also driving Uber earlier, sandwich-making guy? Yeah, I've got 19 jobs.
Well, someone's got to go out and work.
I'm also the deputy mayor.
I mean, no one else can.
Yeah. So yeah. There's just the first thing with that. Practically, it just makes no fucking sense. It's an insult to anyone with basic fucking intelligence. You're going to keep us locked up for 18 months. Your governor in California has just told you he's going to keep you locked up for 18 months. Fuck him. Anyone who's not angry just on a practical level. Then the second thing is the shifting of the goalposts, which we've talked about a couple times and we're going to culminate in this episode. I thought it was fly on the curve. I thought it wasn't eradicate the virus.
I thought it was, if we started today, 3 million dead. Even if we start lockdown today, 3 million dead.
So he's just fucking shifting the goalposts right in front of you and you're okay with that? Fuck you. You're going to shift the goalposts like that. It's not flatten the curve anymore. It's get immunity or a vaccine. Then, this is the most fucking offensive point about what he fucking says. We will base reopening plans on facts and data, not on ideology. Not what we want, not what we hope. First of all, you are basing everything on ideology. Your ideology is that government has to fix this, and government is the solution to the problem, and that it is your fucking responsibility to take care of us. That is your fucking ideology, and you're going to sit there and make it seem like the other side has an ideology, and you don't? And like you have science behind you? It makes me think of that episode of South Park where Cartman goes to the future and everyone's an atheist, and they're all going, hail science, hail science. That's what you're fucking doing. Hail me, hail me. That is so fucking offensive to think that people are that fucking stupid that you say we will base this on facts and data, not on ideology. Especially when you're spinning the facts and data to say whatever you want it to say. To say that you need to keep people in lockdown for 18 months. Which goes to the last thing you say. You make the opposite of your facts and data and your non-ideology what we want and what we hope. You're taking people's, you're literally saying we're going to take our wants and hopes away? That's your solution. Your solution to fixing this is to take your non-ideology and say your wants and hopes don't matter. That's how you want to rule California. Whatever happened to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? If you don't have wants and hopes, you don't have the pursuit of happiness. And you're a fucking governor in the United States of America, and you want us to believe you are the best fucking state? And you're the most progressive, and everyone should follow you and follow your orders? Everyone can talk shit about DeSantis all they want. But when he is opening the beaches, he's saying, I care what people's wants and hopes are. People want to go to the beach. They have hope that they can enjoy their life. And you're saying that doesn't fucking matter, and you don't have an ideology because you have facts on your side. You don't have shit on your side. You have fucking propaganda. If you had facts on your side, you would see that, first of all, what about the fucking antibody test that came out of your fucking state first? Your state, asshole, it came out of, and you're just going to ignore that shit? And what about the fact that your numbers are fucking way below where everyone else was? And I bet if I Googled right now who has the largest Chinese population in America, it'd be fucking the Bay Area in LA. I fucking bet that. And I bet that's why you have the lower case numbers than is expected from all of you. That's what I would think. Because you know what? I bet you the virus was fucking there and in Washington before anywhere else in the fucking country. Because if this started in fall in China, you damn well believe it was in California. So you're going to sit here and grandstand and you're going to just fucking lie? That is one of the worst fucking lies I have ever heard a politician ever say in my entire fucking life. That's how fucking offensive this quote is and how fucking offensive his plan is. And you know what? When you have Disneyland closed down next fucking month, I will be at fucking Disney World on Rise of the Resistance while you're keeping your people in psychological torture and telling them they can't enjoy themselves. And I will fucking laugh my ass off that I got out of your fucking state and you don't have fucking control over me anymore, you piece of shit.
But other than that, you have no thoughts, or?
Yeah, no thoughts besides that.
Okay.
Well, hard to follow that rant, but I had posted about this article from the New York Times, "In Stressful Times, Make Stress Work for You." And the reason it struck me is because I'm seeing the consequence of this psychological torture you're talking about in people. I had mentioned to some friends on a thread on Discord how I was sort of using using what this article was talking about and what some other articles I've been reading talking about, you know, using this time of isolation to sort of build up myself, right? You know, like I have extra time now. Let's use that time to, when I come back, be stronger, right? There's even a great video posted by CPG Gray, Lockdown Productivity Spaceship U, and it's the same sort of inspirational thinking of like, hey, yeah, this is really hard, but here's a way that you can use it to come back to the world better, right, when the world returns. And what was scary was how many people saw that as, I guess, my white privilege, which I did check, Daniel, and I was fine. You know, because people are suffering and they don't have paychecks and things like this. And I was thinking, well, no, this is exactly why this is important, right? Like the worse off you are, the more important it is to have this focus, this non-victimhood mentality, right? I can't control what our stupid governor's going to do, right? I can control what I can do, right? And operate with the span of control I have over my life to make sure that I'm getting the most out of my own life. And the insidiousness of this psychological torture, to bring it full circle to your point, Justin, is that they're trying to make you feel guilty for making the most of your life. That's the insidiousness, right? How dare you enjoy life during a pandemic? Well, fuck you.
That's exactly right. And that's very powerful. And I was struck by a very simple statement that I think I saw from Motive Power, one of our listeners and prominent objectivist Twitter, Instagram guy.
His tweets have been fire over the past couple of weeks. I don't know if us listening to us switched him, but he switched completely to our side and his tweets have been fire.
And there was a really simple Instagram post that he had that was, I hope I'm paraphrasing it correctly or even quoting it correctly, which is something like, they say the lockdowns are only temporary, but life is only temporary. And why I think that's particularly powerful is it's not just because there's a literal mortality sense in which our lives are limited, but it's a sense in which all of our actions require knowledge about the future in order to do things. They require us to project. They require us to order values in order to properly enjoy life and to properly live because of its limited nature. And the lockdowns, you use the word insidious, William, I think are particularly insidious because they take that away in its entirety. They say, don't plan, don't think ahead, don't order your values, because we're not going to allow you to do that. And if you do it, you nailed it, William, we're going to make you feel guilty about it. We're going to destroy the very capacity that you have for living your life. That's why they're bad. I mean, the economic consequences, the mental consequences, but on the philosophical side, it's because they destroy the very thing that makes you human. The whole ordering values to plan for the future, gone. And not only gone, we're never going to tell you when it's coming back. And we don't have to, because we know better, right, Justin? Because we're using science. And you're only using your petty wants and hopes.
And it's our job to do it. It's not your job to make those decisions for yourself. It's our job. And what makes that particularly bad, Daniel, is it was so sudden. And what I mean by that is the infrastructure's still there. The knowledge is still there. We very vividly remember life before they were making those choices for us. And I have to fucking sit there every day. And I literally have to look out. I live on the fourth floor. It's a four-floor building. And the buildings all surround a pool like it's a resort, right? Oh, look how privileged I am, right? I'm sure the fucking BuzzFeed editor hates me, right? I live somewhere where I pay probably a sixth of the rent he pays. and I live in a place that's six times better, right? I'm sure he fucking hates me. I'm late stage capitalism, right?
Yeah.
I have to go out on my balcony where my cats sit all day. My cats are the ultimate creation of the ultimate result, the ultimate recipient of late stage capitalism.
You should name your cat late stage capitalism, the next cat.
When I get a dog after my cats, I'll name him late stage capitalism. I'll just call him Late. Hey Late, how are you, Late? No, they go out there and they sit out there all day in the sun and they love it. And it's a screened in thing, so they don't get any bugs or mosquitoes. It's the greatest thing in the world. But another thing for Florida. Why is Florida the only place that has screens on all their porches? I don't understand it. It's amazing. Daniel would like nature if that were the case. If Daniel could go out on his screen porch, he would love it. But I go out there and I look at the pool and I see the lock on the door. And I have this beautiful pool that I'm not allowed to use. Because people have told me that even in the place that I pay to live, the private property, I can't use. And I can't go to the fitness center and use the weights there, so I'm doing all body weight stuff. Now, to William's point, I'm adding a rep every day. So today I did 3 sets of 60 push-ups, 60 sit-ups, 60 tricep dips, and 3 sets of 30 pull-ups. So I'm doing what William said, but it still sucks that I've resorted to it. It's like I'm in prison. It's like I'm in prison. And it really shows you the difference between prisoners and the prison they're in is only a few slight luxuries.
It's true. It's interesting. I don't know if now's the time to transition to this, and if you don't want to, you can say, let's save that. But, you know, the science comment from Newsom is particularly interesting to me because...
Well, he didn't say the word science. It's a suppressed premise.
Okay. Well, whatever he said, use facts or whatever.
Right. Facts and data, he said.
Facts and data.
I don't want to misquote him. I don't want to misquote him. If we are, this is, I really want to make sure we're saying it. No, I'm serious. Yeah. I really want to make sure we're saying it properly. So anyone who hears this can't go, oh, well, that's a straw man. That's a blah, blah, blah. Let's take his words for what they are and pull it apart because it is literally one of the most evil things I've ever heard anyone say.
Well, the words facts and data probably actually fit my point better. So
good. Good.
which is this. Facts and data, fine. Facts and data about the virus, fine. Facts and data about transmissibility and the R-naught number and comorbidity, is that the word? And fatality rates and case rates and all this stuff. Okay. Here's the thing that we're sort of leaving off the table in terms of facts and data, which is that the science of politics, the philosophy of government are also facts and data that need to be considered in this context. And in particular, Justin, I have very smart friends who are libertarian or conservative or even objectivist who support emergency measures and lockdowns because of the data, because of what the data says, right? Because of the data. And this is ultimately my point. The amount of data out there about the virus and the danger of the virus and, the transmission rate and all that is exceedingly complex and exceedingly huge. And when someone makes a point about, oh, this might not be as deadly as we thought, you get 1,600 people throwing charts at you that show the exact opposite. And when someone puts out a chart that says the lockdown should stay for 10 minutes longer, you get 500 articles, saying it shouldn't. And I would say that you have to be a virologist in order to understand this data, but also virologists disagree about the severity of COVID. So apparently not even virologists can take all the data and integrate it and make the quote unquote platonically objective call. So overall, my question is this, Justin, with all of this incredibly complex data available and us having to make decisions, shouldn't we step back for a moment and look at first principles of what the hell government should be doing in these scenarios anyway? Shouldn't we take at least a minute here and think about, knowing what we know about what the proper role of government is, what its purpose is, aside from the quote-unquote COVID data and COVID facts, what should, if their point, if the point of government is to protect individual rights, then how do they begin to do that in a pandemic? Well, I know that's sort of a basic question that we probably should have been talking, that we have sort of been talking about over many weeks, but I wanted to explicitly bring it up for a few minutes.
I mean, that's a, everything you said is a great point, and it's a great question because it's the intersection of my rant and where I started from at the beginning. If you remember way back in my first, the first episode, we talked about this and I gave my prediction and I was even okay with a million people dying, to be clear. And I'm still confident in that number and I'm still comfortable with that number because we're a country of 350 million. And what I mean by that is I very clearly and intentionally referenced the Declaration of Independence when ranting on Gavin Newsom. Because this country has a foundational principles purposely. So when something like this happens, we should never arrive at a place like this. We should never end up in a place like this. Because if our foundational principles are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, anything that gets in the way of that is an illegitimate source of government. Now, the argument people are going to use is, oh, well, this is protecting life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because if people are dead, well, then how do we have that? And this goes back to, and this is something William can talk about in a second, because it goes back to something I saw in Star Trek all the time growing up, where it was like, if even one life dies, we're not doing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I certainly wouldn't argue utilitarianism, but when nowhere near the majority of people is anywhere going to be threatened by this, this is a way too extreme reaction. And the number one thing that has disappointed me about objectivists specifically is how they ignore those, as you say, first principles. The whole reason I've been so outspoken about this from the beginning is because of objectivism, because of what I read from Ayn Rand and reading and seeing that it's my right to my life and to take those risks on my own. Now, the idea is, well, you live in a community and you affect everybody else. That happens every day of our lives. And if we set the precedent that our unintentional consequences of our actions are something we're morally responsible for, then we're going to have to live in our cages and only be let out when the government tells us we can be let out, because they're going to be the ones who are responsible for making those decisions, making the decision as to what consequence is correct or not. And yeah, this goes into, fuck, I lost my train of thought.
Well, that's okay. Sorry, 'cause I'll pick it up for you.
Threw you off.
I didn't think I'd live to see the day that Dave Rubin and Elon Musk are better objectivists than a lot of the folks that I know on online and via objectivist circles.
Shots fired.
We have Elon Musk.
That reminds me of my point.
We have Elon Musk going on a long rant about the restrictions. As an immigrant, right? Like he's like, I didn't come to this country for this, right? And then you have Dave Rubin, who's talking about like we should never give the government this power. He was like, even if this is an emergency, you should be able to persuade people with the data and have people do what they need to do, right? You should be able to hold people accountable if they do things that are, you know, intentional, like you were saying, Justin. But
yeah,
we have a framework for doing this in individual rights, but we are choosing not to. And we're living with those consequences now.
And that's why Elon Musk, and Daniel, you can follow up. I'm going to make a quick point because it was where I was trying to go to, and I just remembered it. That's why it's so hilarious that Elon Musk is a better objectivist, because he works hand in hand with government in his companies. And it's exactly government's involvement in healthcare that has gotten us to this point.
Yeah.
Because Elon,
for all his flaws, he is a first principles guy, right? Like he takes things down to first principles. Now, he's made mistakes along the way, right? Like that, I'm not saying...
Right, and we could argue all day about him, and is it pragmatic? Did he have any other way of achieving what he wanted to without government involvement? That's a whole other discussion. But my point is, Daniel, there were ways of approaching this with the principle of individualism, and I'm going that far down, Daniel. I'm not even talking about politics. I'm not talking about, maybe individualism is ethics. But I'm going that far down, right? I'm just saying individualism. We could have used the principle of individualism and found ways to fix this, whereas we're saying you take care of the people that are valuable to you. you make sure your people who are vulnerable are taken care of. And the hospitals, you make sure that they have the goods they need. And you make sure you're not taking extra risk on yourself. And you make sure that people are temperature checked before they go into places. There are things we could have done without government intervention, but we've been told our whole lives that government fixes this, so we waited for them to take the solution, to create the solution.
And just real quick, remember all the resistance to the actual legitimate government action, right? Trump closing the border. That's a legitimate government action that needs to be taken during a pandemic, and that was resisted with calls of racism. But anyways, continue, Daniel.
The irony. Both of you said fantastic points. I think one thing that I want to drill down on just a tiny bit more is, in particular, this notion of threat, right? Since the government's primary job being to protect our individual rights, corollary of that is to, forbid the initiation of force or to, as best it can, to punish the initiation of force, to prevent the initiation of force in a certain context, not, unlimited prevention. But and so the question is like, well, what constitutes a threat in a pandemic? So someone sneezing and coughing and whatever, I think clearly a threat. And I think in that case, the government can say, hey, you have to stay over here. You can't leave your home or wherever, because you're a threat. It's a pandemic and whatever. And even if we don't know if you have COVID per se, it's whatever. Or you have to take preventative measures. Maybe you can go out, but if you're wearing a hazmat suit. Point being, that's a little more clear. But part of this is the argument that people make is, well, with COVID, you can be asymptomatic and still spread the virus for days. And so the question I want to ask, and I've thought about this and I have a controversial answer, but potentially is, what about those people who are asymptomatic? Because that's what sort of drives this notion of you must stay home, which is you can spread it without knowing it. What do you, either of you think about that idea that because it's a potential threat, the government has the right to protect other people's individual rights by making us all stay home?
You can't operate off of that principle, because if it's you're asymptomatic and you're a potential threat, well, you're always asymptomatic and you're always a potential threat. You could always have something that we don't know about.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Now,
with the size of Justin's guns, and I mean his arms, he's always a potential threat. So we should just make sure he stays inside at all times.
I was going to say, expand on that just a little bit more. What do you mean? You're always a potential threat.
I mean, you're making a rule based upon what we don't know. And we don't know a lot of things. We don't know a lot of things about the world. And if you're making it based upon what you don't know, you're basically saying we don't know anything, so everything's always a threat. Which is true. Life is a threat. I hate to break it to you, but there's a quote from Boy Meets World that people think is super profound, and it's not, because it's been around a long time, but it applies here. Life's tough. Get a helmet. Like that, the reason that quote exists is because the second you go outside, you're putting yourself at risk. The second you wake up, you're putting yourself at risk. Have you ever seen the movie Final Destination? The reason that movie was so scary, and it was so... You didn't think I was going to go here, but
no,
it's relevant.
That was a turn
wow.
I did not expect.
Go from Boy Meets World to Final Destination.
Yeah, this is my life. Welcome to the brain of Justin. The reason that movie was so successful and so terrifying in a certain way is the point is you don't know when you're going to die. And you don't know what minor action you're going to take that's going to hurt somebody else. I mean, what if I go through a yellow light? I speed through it because, I need to get somewhere, right? Or I really need to take a shit, right? Oh, God, I got to take a shit. So I speed through the yellow light. But because I do that, somebody has to slam on his brakes. Well, he slams on his brakes, and the person behind him rear-ends him and ends up in the hospital. Well, that person's in the hospital. They get a staph infection and die. Am I now responsible for that person's death because I had to take a shit really badly? That's the where you're going, because you never know the consequences of your actions. You can't hold someone responsible. You can't hold everyone responsible for what they don't know, because I'll fucking say it. We don't fucking know anything, really. We're specks.
And Justin, instead of it being you had to take a shit, what if it was you were literally bleeding out and racing to the hospital?
Well, right. I intentionally used
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Something extreme. I'm trying to point out that people are looking at the what and trying to make objective calls about what those things are, and you don't have the context of the why for each individual, right? Doing something that you would consider mundane and unessential might be essential to someone else. But
right.
Even more to your point, life is not risky because you wake up. Life's risky even when you're sleeping. In other words, like that's being alive is the thing, right? That like yes. Juggling those risks is the thing of being alive. The only alternative is death.
Right. What yeah. Is it? Something like you swallow like 3 spiders in your lifetime or some shit when you're asleep?
Don't think about it, Justin. You'll never sleep again.
Oh, believe me, when I heard that stat for the first time, I had a couple sleepless weeks.
Justin, knowing your cats, they're probably placing the spiders into your mouth.
Well, that's the other thing too, right? Like, you think I don't breathe in a lot of fucking cat hair? But that's the that's the risk assessment I take, and that's the thing that bothered me from the beginning about this, Daniel. I do believe there is a legitimate line. Okay, there's a legitimate line in that if like I went outside and I had like a 50% chance of infecting someone, and then if they got it, they had an 80% chance of dying. Well, maybe if those were the numbers, and again, I'm just throwing out numbers. I'm not a virologist, as you said, so I don't know what the right numbers are. But if it was that extreme, well, then maybe there is a legitimate purpose of a lockdown, right? So there is a legitimate line. But again, we didn't operate off of those first principles, so nowhere in the beginning did we actually have this discussion. And that's why in the beginning I was like, there's got to be something worse than this with this. And I think that's where a lot of the bioweapon speculation has come from and stuff, because a lot of people are looking for that justification, because you think to yourself, there's got to be a justification for us acting like this is the fucking apocalypse.
Yeah, Daniel, I want to take a little different tack, because I think I understand what your answer may be, but I want to give my answer and see what you think about it. So I think if we had approached this from the framework of individual rights, we would have said up front, hey, this is scary. There's a lot of unknowns. Once we know the following things, then we will end the lockdown. But for now, this seems really scary. It could be a bioweapon, could be all sorts of other things. It's traveling way faster than we expect. And reports from China are it's quite deadly. And it's quite deadly to our doctors, which would help us, would hurt us if we needed to, if it was something like a bioweapon. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to lock down while these conditions exist. The problem is we didn't start that way. And so now that those conditions, those hypothetical conditions that we didn't set, have been met, where we know more about it, where we are better equipped to handle it now, that there are less unknowns, right? We've gone from complete unknowns to there's still a lot unknown, but we understand it better. Then you objectively remove those restrictions. Does that make sense? I think you can operate it in that individual, with that individual rights framework, and say, hey, the conditions for life are threatened right now. And that threat would be a bioweapon, right? Like that's the real threat, right? And there's other, even something that's not a bioweapon, but something like the Spanish flu or something would have been a serious problem, right? So you say, hey, this could be one of these rare events. We're going to lock down until we can meet the following criteria so we know it's not one of these rare events.
I think that's right. And I think your solution there is operating within the framework that I think is the proper way to think about this from a philosophical standpoint, which is there's known threat. So here's the things we know, and these are the things we're going to restrict because we know that they're a literal threat. And then I think what people conflate is potential threat. And the reason I think people conflate it is because there's actually two types of potential threats in life. And this might sound dumb, but there's a known potential threat, and there's an unknown potential threat. And so within your framework, I think it makes sense to say, here are the known potential threats, and within that framework, we're going to do some things that restrict, liberties temporarily, but we're going to leave a lot of things on the table. But for things that are unknown potential threats, I don't think the government has any power to act in that area. None. I don't think they have any power to act in unknown potential threats.
I agree, and I'm going to give you the reason why when you're done.
Please do. My overall point here is if you're right, William, if we had approached this much more this way, I think we'd feel a lot more comfortable with it, especially as objectivists and people who want to protect individual rights, because I do think there are legitimate powers for the government to make sure that people don't spread particularly infectious diseases, especially to potentially vulnerable populations. But it has to be within the context, as you were talking about, of what we know about the thing, are the potentials, but the potentials that we do know, and the potentials that we don't know. That's very abstract, and I think combined with your points, which is much more concrete, actually make some sort of cohesive point.
William, my degree from FU says you are 100% correct.
Thank you. I'm glad you agree with me, Justin.
Well, I'm going to make this a little more concrete and drive home what you're saying, Daniel. I'm going to make it concrete by being a bit more abstract, but I'm not really. Because what I'm going to talk about is when you talk about potential threats and those potential
known potential threats and unknown potential threats.
Right. And when you're talking about the known ones, that's fine. That's something you can actually talk about and say, hey, this is a threat. This is how we deal with it, blah, blah, blah. And when you're talking about the unknown, you get into what I say is psychological framing. And this is why especially objectivists really upset me in this situation. Because one of the things I love about objectivism, I love the most about objectivism, and this is why people might say I'm more of a sense of life objectivist, but the idea that your purpose is to live life and live a good life and enjoy life. That's a psychological framing, Daniel. And that's a psychological framing that says the focus on life should be what you can accomplish and what you can do and what you can enjoy and the good things about life. But if you're focusing on the unknown potential threats, that is a fundamentally negative psychological framing. That is going into the Super Bowl and saying, well, we can't do these things because if we do them, we could lose the game. No, when you game plan, you game plan and you say, well, this is what we're good at. This is what we can achieve. This is what we're going to do that. And if it doesn't work, you go, well, fuck. We either game plan wrong or we executed wrong. But you don't go in and try not to lose. That's what you're doing if you're trying to always deal with unknown potential threats. Your entire life is then not to lose. That's not what life is about. That's not what objectivism is about. Life is about living, enjoying. Life is about winning. I know that's fascist probably and racist or something, right, nowadays? But
sounds
that's
late
what life
stage
is about.
Capitalistic to me.
But yeah, it's very late stage capitalism. It's about winning.
I've never said this to you before on this show, Justin, but that is a fantastic point.
Woohoo! My life is complete.
Quick, end the show before Justin talks more.
The reason that's a fantastic point is I think it integrates all the things all three of us have been talking about this show and goes back to the first principles of government, which is in a pandemic, which is what is the framework that we can set up to minimize actual threats, but that allow people to pursue their values.
That's the Declaration of Independence, Daniel. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's why I said it when I was ranting about Newsom.
Yes. We solved it, everyone. We solved COVID. Congratulations. Unfurl the banner. Mission accomplished. We've solved COVID.
Well, this is why, Daniel, when you were saying this stuff at the beginning, but you know, the intro about, now it's not flattening the curve, now it's beating this thing. That's why that's so fucking evil, because beating this thing is the negative psychological framework. The idea that we can't even go outside if there's a potential unknown threat there. That if I go outside, if I call Elliot and I say, hey, Elliot, let's go get a steak for dinner tonight and go to Epcot or go to Hollywood Studios and go on Rise of the Resistance. If I call him and do that, it could be, oh, well, anyone you come across could have it and you could get sick. Yeah, I fucking know that. They could also have the flu. They could also have smallpox. They could also bump into me and trip me and I could blow out my ACL. Like, there's any number of things that could happen. But to say because of those potential unknown threats that I'm not allowed to go outside and enjoy myself, that's what happens when they're saying we need to beat it rather than just simply flatten the curve.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is literally impossible for anyone, let alone the government, to account for all unknown potential threats and still live anything close to what we would call a life.
Right, and that's the point specifically about this disease. And that's why I want to end the episode here. I want to culminate it here. And I want to touch on and ask you both what you think. That's why I think they've changed the rhetoric, because they know the goal is not achievable and they're using it to gain more power. And what I mean by that is, even if there's a vaccine and you mandate it, there's still going to be people who don't have it, the vaccine, and potentially have COVID. So then at that point, can anyone go outside? Because any of those people could get sick and die. What about the unknown potential threat about the people who may not have the vaccine?
Isn't that also, vaccines aren't 100% effective, right?
Right. So then there's the unknown potential threat of you get the vaccine, but you're still a carrier and you still have it. So from the beginning, I've always said there's no way to actually defeat this in the way they're saying. Because
and there's
always
no
people with
exit criteria
bad hygiene
for this.
Yeah.
For these restrictions.
Not only is there no criteria, I don't think it's realistic in the sense of it's unknowable. It's unknowable to know if this is ever beaten.
And also, you know, COVID-20.
Well, that's part of the unknown, right? If it mutates.
Mutate, not mutate, new disease, new coronavirus, new yeah. other virus, new whatever.
So do you agree that they're changing the rhetoric now from flatten the curve to beat the thing because they want it to, it's a power grab?
I think there are many explanations for why they are changing the rhetoric. I do agree that they are changing it, just as we are experiencing now a soft revolution. I think at the same time, at the top, there is a soft despotism. And what I mean by that is it's sort of de Tocqueville, i.e., yes, there are people doing these things. They all have different reasons for doing these things. And I don't think they're potentially coordinating. They just have sort of similar ideologies. So some of it is power grab. I think some of it is an anti-Trump thing. Yes, I'm that cynical to think that governors would tank their own states and economies to hurt Trump. I absolutely, unequivocally, 100% believe that, knowing these morons as well as I do. And some of it I do think, although it's a smaller percentage, is people who think they're legitimately doing the right thing. They're not, but I take some of them at their word. Not all, but a very small minority.
William, anything to say?
I think I've said it all. This is defeatism at its highest level.
All right. Well, I think that's a great way to end this episode. I think we've said a lot, and we didn't even talk about the New Mexico governor closing down roads into a city. So thought we were going to touch on that, but we didn't. So I think it's a great way to close out this episode. So why don't we talk about what we learned this trip? William?
Well, I learned our COVID response has been like going to the Super Bowl and trying not to lose.
It's a good analogy. I learned that Justin should probably see a couples counselor with the state of California and really work out their issues, because, boy, Justin. What did you learn?
I learned that maybe finally people have heard me. For the first time in my life, I feel like finally whatever's going on in my brain rattled out for someone to be like, wait, he actually understands things and knows the important thing to say. We should listen to him. I feel like that happened for the first time ever. That's what I feel like.
Someone grabbed that drop about me telling Justin he made a good point.
For the first time ever.
For the first time ever.
Yeah.
I love that was a football metaphor, too.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. It was cathartic. I feel like tired after this episode. Maybe I have the flu.
You feel the opposite of me. I want to go beat up someone right now. Like I could go wrestle a match right now. That's how I feel right now. I'm like pumped up. Like let's go to the Super Bowl, guys. Let's fucking go. Belichick, sign me up, buddy.
Let's take our four-wheelers to the skate park, Justin.
You're in California. I don't need to do that. I can go to the beach and they don't care.
Well, no matter what you're doing, today, tomorrow, this week, go to themidside.com/podcast and make us a part of your day. Listen to some past shows when we weren't talking about viruses and governors closing roads to states and Gavin Newsom so much, although we've talked about Gavin Newsom a lot. And then once you're done listening to some episodes, go to Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, which I think is now what it's called. They've rebranded. And give us a 5-star review. It really helps. And go to patreon.com/themidside. Give us a couple bucks every time we produce one of these things. We appreciate it greatly. Our Patreon subscribers are fantastic. There's also a Patreon exclusive chat in Discord if you join that. So don't forget about Discord. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us to our libertarian friends out there. And last but certainly not least, tell a friend about the show. And until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a soft revolution. So, Justin, is Antifa getting what they want, just in the opposite way they intended? Instead of the people rising up to fight against the fascist capitalists or whatever they say, now you have all these normal, everyday people softly rebelling against the government.
Yeah, there's an irony there, especially because they're all wearing masks while doing it.